From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Billions, billions of holiday cards are sent each season, some silly, some serious, some sacred. It's a time to show off your style and personality, and in the age of social media, receiving a personalized card note in the mail is becoming more and more rare. Some say holiday cards were the first form of social media, dating back to the late 1800s. We'll look at the history of Christmas cards and more, and how they've changed. This hour, On Point, the first social media, season's greetings. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Do you still get them, send them, love them, not? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Washington is Daniel Gifford, Assistant Professor of American Popular and Visual Culture at George Mason University, author of American Holiday Postcards 1905 to 1915. Daniel Gifford, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
You call holiday cards, Christmas cards, the first social media. What do you mean?
I think there's a lot of parallels and a lot of similarities between the two mediums and the two forms. I think they're both ultimately about connection and making connection, making a sort of network. We call them a social network today. I sometimes call it a network of community and kin. And cards have been a big part of that long before the internet and social media and Facebook and the rest.
For a long time, they kind of jumped the pond to come here. I'm reading that Sir Henry Cole, all the way back in the early 19th century in England, was the first guy to really send out a lot of cards by the mail system, the postal system, a little 3x5-inch triptych with three parts to it, world's first commercial Christmas card in, 1808 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
A central image, and this will sound familiar today, of a multi-generational family toasting the health of their absent friend, whoever it was addressed to, and on either side, scenes of feeding and clothing the poor, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you, an inscription there. They could be personalized. Was this a breakthrough?
It was. I mean, this idea of reaching out to people through the mail itself is, an invention that, is taking shape and taking form throughout the 1800s and sort of harnessing that power to reach out to a large network of friends and family and loved ones that you may or may not see over the holiday season was kind of a leap forward, the idea of harnessing that power.
For decades, Americans who sent them out imported them from England, from the UK, but 1875, you get a big dive into the Christmas card then, or holiday card pond you tell us the story.
Well, so the first American to really make a splash, as you say, in this arena is Louis Prang.
A Prussian immigrant,
I guess,
based in Boston.
Yeah, and he came to the Boston area, was an immigrant himself. The fact that he was from Prussia is important because all of what we now call Germany had been very active and very sort of pioneering in printing techniques and lithography in particular. And so Prang comes to America.
And a little crazy about Christmas. I think Germans believe they invented Christmas.
Yes. And so they do a good job of marrying up this sort of domestic holiday that's emerging and forming along with, the visuals, the idea of creating a visual, creating some sort of image for the season. And Prang didn't start with Christmas cards. He was actually very successful in a lot of different printing arenas. He was actually pretty famous for his chromolithographs. But around 1875, and some say it was his wife that made the suggestion, he does his first batch of Christmas greeting cards, and they're a hit. And by the 1880s, he's publishing more than 5 million each year. So Americans quickly saw the benefit of this this product and kind of fell in love with it.
I'm sure that attracted competition in a hurry. Who jumped in where?
Well, it's interesting. So he sort of goes along, and there's some small-time printers and producers. But really, the next leap forward actually is not in greeting cards as we think of them, in terms of something you put in an envelope and seal up. The next big leap was actually the postcard phase, or postcard fad. And this is something, a lot of people don't know about, but around the beginning of the 20th century, postcards were huge. I mean, billions, again with the B, being sent. And, even though we think of them today as kind of, wish you were here travel mementos, at the time, holiday postcards were a really big deal. And people would send them for all the major holidays, but Christmas especially. And so...
So never mind the red and green envelopes and all that. They were right out there, postcard style, for everyone to see. And is this where we got the Hall brothers out of St. Louis? Were they the Hallmark originators somewhere in this time?
Yeah, so the Hall, J.C. Hall in particular, Kansas City area.
Kansas City, that's right.
Mm-hmm, gets involved on the postcard side at first. Not as a producer. He's basically a salesman, what they call a jobber. And he would take literally shoeboxes filled with postcards and take them to different retail drugstores and the like to sell them. And that was how he got involved and interested in this media, eventually was successful enough to start his own shop in Kansas City, and then made the leap, kind of forced to after a fire wiped out his inventory, made the leap into production and starts producing. And by that point, the postcard end of things had sort of died out for a variety of reasons. The fad was kind of over, and the greeting card sort of comes back. But it's that bridge, especially over Christmas, where people get really used to lots of holiday images and lots of holiday messages. And then that's what Hall and others are able to capitalize on throughout the rest of the 20th century.
What's your sense of the central function or functions of the holiday greeting card, Christmas card or a Hanukkah card, if that's what you're sending, whatever it may be, but it comes at that year-end holiday time. What's your sense of the core function or functions of it, Daniel?
Sure. I actually think there's kind of two. The first is this idea of maintaining community, maintaining connections, maintaining a network of friends and family and kin. And I think the fact that this holiday comes towards the end of the year is sort of an ideal opportunity to take stock of the year, to update that network on what has happened and what's been both good and bad. Mostly good. I don't think we put a lot of the bad stuff in our holiday cards.
Censored, edited.
Yeah, exactly. Which kind of brings me to the second aspect of it, which I think holiday cards, and again, I think this is why it has this sort of connection to social media, is very much about presenting an image of ourselves, putting a version of ourselves forward to a small public, like friends and family, and then when they're postcards, to the large public. I mean, when anyone can see these postcards going through the mail. And so I think the images that we pick, what goes on the front of holiday cards, is almost as important and perhaps more important than what we write on the inside or what we allow the producer to write for us on the inside.
And you mean whether or not it's literally a visual image of yourself or your family, or whether it's the image you choose to send, the design of it, the motif, the aesthetic of it, all those are representations of something you want to share and be associated with.
Exactly. There's all kinds of holiday cards that you can choose from. You can pick, religious imagery. You can pick a humorous topic. You can mm-hmm. pick something that's very avant-garde and cutting edge. Well, each one of those choices that you make, or the choice to put a picture of your family out there, is saying something about us. It's saying sort of what we prioritize, what we want people to see when they think of us, and how we want to present ourselves to that larger community.
Have the printed messages in holiday cards, Christmas cards, and more changed over time in different eras, different decades?
I think they've been remarkably consistent in terms of just the sort of generic, well wishes for the holiday, mm-hmm. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Certainly in certain periods, you get more specific messages, like during World War two very patriotic messages, and the idea of home and hearth during the Great Depression. In fact, FDR, one of his White House Christmas cards, instead of saying, Happy New Year, it was more looking forward to a better year.
Yeah.
During the Great Depression, the idea of hope for the future in sort of bad times. But, other than those sort of, very specific examples, I think the overall message is very consistent, which is, love, happiness, and joy of the season to these people that I care about.
There was a time when rural landscapes were all the dominant feature here in these greetings.
Yeah, and I think this is where it gets really interesting to look at these images in different eras, because I think they have different meanings depending on what's going on. So,
I mean, everybody remembers the sleigh and horses over the bridge to grandmother's house and all that through the snow. I've seen that a million times in cards.
And, you know, and holiday cards didn't invent that motif. Mm-hmm. You know, Currier and Ives had capitalized on that sort of nostalgia for the rural ideal and the nostalgic past for a long time. But, you know, especially at the beginning of the 20th century, when greeting cards and postcards are just really clogging the mail in a big way, this was also the time where we were actually shifting from a predominantly rural to a predominantly urban society, an urban country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was a lot of angst about this, a lot of questioning whether this was going to sort of tear at the moral fabric of the nation, where, you know, is, and so you see this sort of return to fields and farms and barns and ponds and forests, because they are sort of the ideal of a holiday, the moral center of this holiday season.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this time about the first modern social media, the one that's still around: holiday cards, Christmas cards, Hanukkah cards, the year-end status update, the photos of the family and all the rest, and what those cards are all about. You can join us this hour. Is that you out there sending stacks and stacks, keeping in touch, getting the kids' photos out, sharing love, bragging a little bit? Do you like sending them? Is it a joy, a job, a headache? Do you keep a basket on the dining room table of those cards coming in? What do they mean? What do they mean to you? And is it odd that we're still sending them out when we've got so many ways to communicate now, status updates every which way on Facebook and Twitter and Snapchat and more? But they're out there, and if people don't get them, well, 1965, the animated TV special Charlie Brown Christmas, Charlie Brown's feeling a little down about the holiday season. Here's a scene he goes to check his mailbox for any Christmas cards.
Hello in there. Rats. Nobody sent me a Christmas card today. I almost wish there weren't a holiday season. I know nobody likes me. Why do we have to have a holiday season to emphasize it? Thanks for the Christmas card you sent me, Violet.
I didn't send you a Christmas card, Charlie Brown.
Don't you know sarcasm when you hear it?
The pain of the empty mailbox in the Christmas card, holiday card season. Daniel Gifford is with us. He's assistant professor of American popular and visual culture at George Mason University and has dug deeply into the history and culture surrounding holiday greetings. Daniel, we've got lots of response online. It's interesting here. NSTEP says, I've switched over to e-cards. They progressively become more incredible and inspiring. You get to personalize the card, email it to your address book. Big enthusiast for that there. And I wonder, you know, why paper cards are still around when that's so easy. On the other hand, here's Darian. He writes, my love and I started sending out yearly holiday cards just a few years back, and the list seems to be growing between family and friends. I'm not a big pusher of it, but my friends have jumped on board. So even in the digital time, people getting into that, not everybody's on board. Granola Bob says to us, no thanks. I prefer sending edgy memes. Daniel Gifford, why do you think the paper thing is still around when the digital thing is more and more robust and obviously easier to send?
Yeah, it is interesting because, you know, the end of the holiday, the paper holiday card has been prognosticated for a decade at least. You know, each year we seem to get another round of, you know, this is surely the end of it. And yet it doesn't end. It keeps going. And I think there may be a couple of reasons. I think there is something about the tactile. There is something about opening a mailbox and reaching in and getting something that has been sent and that sense of, you know, that it's been carried over a distance and that it's been, you know, passed through multiple hands to you. I think there is something resonant about that. And perhaps even more so now that we are so used to electronic. I think that there's this idea of something special that comes in the mail. The other thing that I think is relevant here is this idea of reciprocity, that if you get a holiday card, you have to send a holiday card,
yes,
and that's sort of expected of it. So whoever is keeping it going in your family might be keeping it going for the whole network.
There's a little chain letter effect here.
Yeah, almost. And it's interesting. There's been a couple studies where researchers have tested if people got holiday postcards from complete strangers, would they then turn around? Would they still feel that sense of reciprocity and send a holiday card back to a complete stranger? And 20% in both of these studies actually did that. So I think this is a very strong impulse. And when looking at some of the examples from previous decades, one thing you see over and over again, especially going back to these postcards, is this idea of, why haven't you written me? I've sent you multiples now. Why haven't I gotten any in return? It sort of, feeds on itself.
Do not leave me hanging here. Daniel Gifford, let's stand by in Washington. I want to go to Hillsborough, California, and Chris Wu, he's CEO and co-founder of Paper Culture, an online holiday card and stationery company. They keep track of a lot of what's going on. Chris Wu, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Tom.
What trends do you see? Are millennials, are Gen Xers, is everybody picking this up, or is it trailing off?
No, it's, I loved listening to what Daniel was saying, that in some sense, the more popular digital becomes, the more unique that physical card in the mail is. You're so used to opening your mailbox and just seeing junk mail and advertisements.
Yeah.
It's such a unique experience now.
Yeah, a real letter or even a card these days is a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think it's really different, quite frankly, from Gen X and Millennial. We actually have a very interesting base. We're right about split between Gen X and Millennials, and they definitely exhibit different qualities and different preferences. With the Gen X folks, it's a lot of perfectly beautiful pictures, right? A lot of studio, professional photos, or definitely posed photos where every hair is in the right place.
Yeah.
And with millennials, you see much more a feeling of trying to get that candid shot, that seeking of authenticity.
But they're masters of this. This is the Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook photo generation.
Absolutely. They've grown up in front of cameras, right? If you think about the difference between when you and I grew up, it was, hey, we had film cameras. And, every shot you had to think about because, gosh, that costs you money, right? And so you only took your cameras to the really special events. And now with the millennial generation, they've grown up with a camera phone in their pocket, right? They get every single moment.
So that candid telling shot is the sought-after item.
Absolutely. Well, and ironically, it's candid, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's totally random, right?
Yeah,
I think it's the appearance
selfie time
of candid that they go for. And
yeah,
in some sense, these guys are the ultimate in holiday card photo producers because they're so practiced, right? They have hundreds of photos a day, that they might be going through. And they're specialists at curating. And, a certain type of photo goes on Pinterest versus Snapchat versus Facebook, right? And just in the same way, a certain type of photo they need to pick for their holiday cards, right? And it's different.
We've got lots of questions. I've got lots of questions. Callers here as well. Let me go to Jill in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Jill, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm so thrilled to hear your voice.
Oh, sure. I'm happy to share it with you. What's your card story?
My card story is I'm parked here in front of the stationers. I know there's only 12 days until Christmas, but I'm buying some cards. And I said, wow, this is such a great subject. Mr. Daniel really hit the nail on the head.
You better get going. Only 12 days to go here. What are you looking for? What's the look or the feel that you're looking for, Jill?
I'm looking
or the
for
message.
Something that's going to share my heart, right?
Mm-hmm.
I used to make my cards when I had the time. Now I don't really have that much time. I take care of my sister-in-law, who lives with Alzheimer's, so, it isn't that much time for it. But I still treasure the cards that I get, and I tape them up on the door, just like my grandmother used to do. And everybody who comes wants to go through the cards first and see who wrote and what they wrote and all that.
You want to share your heart. How many do you think you might send out this year? A half dozen, a dozen, 20? I don't know.
More. Oh, probably 40 or 50.
Oh, okay. Pretty good circle.
Well, we're a military family, and so we traveled around for 29 years.
Yes.
And we have friends in a lot of beautiful places that we want to remember at least once a year.
I hope you get them out and get them out on time, and all those friends know you're sharing your heart with them and remembering them. I mean, it's a great feeling at the other end of it, Jill. Good luck. I hope you find a great card in there.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Lisa in Denver, Colorado. Lisa, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Yeah. What's your story, Lisa?
Well, I got divorced about 3 years ago and kind of dropped out of my social network and kind of went under the radar and had a couple of moves, as my ex-husband also did. So I haven't received any Christmas cards in a while, and I decided, you know, the holidays are rough for a lot of people, including me, so I decided to post to all my Facebook friends, "Would you please send me a Christmas card?"
Good for you. Good. Is it working, Lisa? Have you got something in the mailbox?
Yes, I have started to receive them. Several people messaged me to get my address, and I felt better already just kind of putting it out there that, hey, I'm lonely. I want to hear from you, so it's great.
Lisa, stick with us for a second. Daniel Gifford in Washington, I mean, this must be an issue. If you've got divorce or some major life change, you could blow up that network that provided you the mailing list and also the incoming flow of cards at the holiday time.
Absolutely. And I think one thing that's interesting is both of these callers are female. And all that work that goes into maintaining family relationships and maintaining the information about families, not just, you know, who's divorced and who's changed their last name, but who's moved and who's added a kid. And, you know, all that work is actual work and labor. And it's work that traditionally has been part of the domestic sphere, has been sort of gendered as the female's role. And I think kind of gets overlooked at how much work and effort and labor actually goes into maintaining all of these lists and responsibilities and who's where and who's on the list this year and who do I need to take off the list because of, you know, whatever the reason. And in fact, in sort of academic circles, there's a term for it called kin work. And the idea of maintaining these networks of kin and family is a form of gendered labor, and it takes a lot of effort, and I think it deserves the recognition of any other type of labor, because it's tough. It's hard work.
Oh, it's a lot of work. Let's hope that everybody's pitching in to get the cards out. Chris Wu, do you see certain kinds of cards or trends when people are in transition in their lives? Maybe they're moving or they've changed social circles. Do you see your product as stitching people back together or helping them reach out?
Absolutely. You know, I think holiday cards are, as Daniel said, it's a way of reconnecting. And it's also a way of announcing, right? There's a very practical, we see a lot of people saying, hey, I've changed my address, right? And it's a great way to sort of notify people that you've moved in a natural way versus just sending a plain, boring card that says, here's my new address. You can spruce it up with the joys of the holiday season. I think the other thing that people are really looking out is to, you know, maybe even change the narrative, right? So, you know, those that are, when you send a holiday card, I think sometimes it's about spreading joy and joy that may not have filled your entire past year, but it's a time to really cherish those special moments, right? And so we see a lot of real fun cards becoming popular, especially with the next generation, which takes it a little bit less, as we said, the formal occasion, and more as a way of sort of expressing their true emotions.
Give us an example of what's new in the message front, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. So you see some fun cards. So I'm no millennial, though I wish I was. And I have to admit that my favorite cards are the fun cards, which really reflect some of the chaos in your life. So we have a card called Not So Silent Night, and it features a crying baby.
Yeah, yeah.
And
keeping it real.
As a parent, I can so relate to that, right?
Not so.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, just Not So Silent Night, and we can see it already. Plenty of those, even at the holiday time. Of course, quiet ones too, we hope. Chris, Daniel, let me get a call from Noel, no less, in Buffalo, New York. Noel, thank you for calling. It's good to have you.
Good to be here. Thanks for answering my call.
Doesn't your name mean Christmas, if I'm not mistaken?
It does. It's spelled a little differently, okay. But it's perfect for the season.
Good.
So,
what have you got, Noel?
Well, the reason why I'm calling is I'm a millennial, and I grew up, you know, receiving Christmas cards via dial-up AOL, you know, just silly ones that, you know, you look at, but I felt like there was no personal meaning behind them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I get a physical card in the mail, it, to me, that just means that actually came from your heart. And someone took their time, they went out of their way, you know, they went out, bought the Post-it, and they sent it to me. It's so sweet and caring compared to just a couple of people just right-clicking a few websites, typing in my name, and that being it for the holiday season. It feels more personal to me.
Yeah, even as a millennial, or maybe especially as a millennial, Noel.
Yes, especially, you know, I really do. I feel like our generation may have lost that, I think, because we are so glued to technology that human one-on-one contact sometimes I feel like is missing. And, you know, I appreciate when it comes back in the form of a Christmas card or whatever that may be.
Noel, Christmas herself, calling in from Buffalo, New York there. Noel, thank you for calling. Chris, what about, you know, in the last couple of decades, the cards with photos on them seem to me to have just exploded. I mean, it's been a long time now that's been going on, but the ratio of cards that are essentially family photos versus those which are essentially greeting cards in the traditional mode, do you know what the volume of each tends to be?
Well, for us, we have about 85% photos. Excuse me. And
so overwhelmingly with photos in there.
It's overwhelmingly with photos. But that's a little bit different than if you were Hallmark or a traditional greeting card company, you would probably have a lot more non-photos. And the real reason is that online you can add photos versus offline you can't,
right.
Other than adding a physical photo.
Yeah.
So I think one of the beauties of online is that you can add those photos. And then the second part that we see is that people, because they have so many photos, want to add multiple photos. And that's really, they can't choose, right? So they have so many to pick from.
So it's sort of photos like confetti on some of these cards. You'll have a half a dozen photos there. General Gifford, this is a long way from just Courier and Ives, where they've carved one image of a sleigh and horse and rider. This is as intimate as it can get. It's your family, posed, perhaps, often on the beach somewhere, even though it's the middle of winter. People think all year about what they're going to put on that card, Daniel.
They do, and it's kind of interesting because, as you said, the idea of putting a picture on a holiday card is not necessarily new, but it used to be a lot more expensive, and it used to be something that you would do if you were fairly wealthy or powerful, if you were a political family. The royals always did it, and so I think there was a certain cachet to being able to add a picture to a card that made it accessible to everybody with the advent of digital and electronic.
Yeah. Daniel Gifford, please stand by, and Chris Wu. It's not all Christmas. This is 8 Nights of Joy with Rabbi Joe Black behind us for Hanukkah. We're talking holiday cards. This is On Point.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 nights of joy. From the streets of Tel Aviv to Chicago, Illinois. Hanukkah's fun for moms and dads and girls and boys. Yeah, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 nights of joy.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Blue Apron, providing pre-portioned fresh ingredients with easy recipes delivered to your door. Check out this week's menu and get 3 meals free with free shipping at blueapron.com/onpoint. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Hanukkah's fun for moms and dads and girls and boys. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 nights of joy. All right.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the first modern social media, the one that's still around. Holiday cards, Christmas cards, Hanukkah cards, that year-end status update, and what those cards are all about. Chris Wu is with us, CEO, co-founder of Paper Culture out of California, online holiday card and stationery company. Daniel Gifford is here. He has made a study of this, assistant professor at George Mason University in popular and visual culture there. And holiday cards are certainly both of those. You can join us this hour. What's your style of season's greetings? Is it old school, humorous, holy, family portraits on the beach? Is it a good feeling at least one time a year to get mail you want to read? We hope. And when we have so much digital social media, why do we keep sending those cards? On Friday's Late Show with Stephen Colbert, Stephen Colbert reeled off first drafts of holiday card messages, always a subtext.
We don't want to exclude any of our Jewish friends, of course. Here's one with a menorah, and it says, wishing you love and happiness all Hanukkah long. But the first draft read, this was the only Hanukkah card they had. True. Yeah. Okay. And here's our final. This is our final first draft card. Here's a classic sentiment. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. But the first draft said, make America great again.
Oh, boy. Oh, no. Oh, no. Colbert right there on it. Daniel Gifford, Chris Wu, please stand by. Miriam Nafisi is with us. We've got a lot of callers, and I'll come right to them. But, Miriam, I don't want to make you wait. They're in San Francisco, founder and CEO of Minted. It's a design marketplace, a sort of crowdsourced stationery and art and home decor from independent designers all over the world. Her company went out and looked at the types of words used in greeting cards before and after the presidential election. Miriam, thank you so much for being with us. What did you find?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, we found that we've been sourcing holiday cards through competitions since 2008. 9 years ago, we started our first holiday card competition, and we typically get 5,000 entries and 2 million consumer votes per challenge. So,
what this is like, artists and artisans from all over can submit cards, and if people can sort of vote them up,
and people vote. That's right. And so, we really are analytics based as a company, and use data to we have a lot of data about design, actually, about how design is formed and how designers work together, and then what consumers want. And so, what we found, you know, there were many years where I couldn't sell the word peace to anyone. I would get comments like, peace is a hippy-dippy term. I don't want to, I'm embarrassed to put the peace symbol on my card and use the word peace. But this year, we found that the word cheer is down 14% year over year. The word, but peace and hope are up. Peace is up 14% up over last year, and 9% up, especially since the election. So we saw that trend get accentuated after
the cheer seems especially too much to ask for some people right now, but peace and hope they're desperate for.
Exactly. Yeah. We're seeing a lot of trends. Other trends are that people are, for example, the number two card selling card in Washington, D.C. right now is actually a card with a peace symbol on it and no photo on the front. So this is the first year in our 9 years of selling holiday cards where we've seen non-photo cards in the bestseller list in a couple of areas of the country.
Interesting.
And that's very, very unusual for us.
You think because people, suddenly there's a sentiment that they want to convey more than just, here's the fam.
Right. That they might feel a little bit more, some people, so we've got, you know, customers who are happy and customers who are not happy, probably half and half. And some people are feeling like they need to be a bit more reflective and that this is not a typical year. And I think that's the sentiment we're getting from customers. In fact, many of them, some of them, I should say, have called and asked post-election to change their greeting cards, meaning they placed an order, and they say to us, can you please refund? Is there any way you can help me out? I need to change the greeting on my card.
Well, the times and the moment and the news and everything going on certainly are going to affect the way people think about that message. And, of course, this year, for this was, for many people, a big unexpected political development. And some people may feel that cheer and some may not. Miriam, stand by there. A caller for you from New York, Coventry, New York. John is calling. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi, John. Tom, thanks for taking the call.
Yeah.
Just wanted to give a shout to Noelle on her call. I couldn't agree with her more.
Noelle in Buffalo. Love that.
Yeah, it's great. I go around the antique shops and purchase the old postcard Christmas cards.
Mm.
And the really interesting thing is, for one, you get the stamp, which is posted for the year.
Right.
I just sent one last night that was 110 years old.
Oh, you resend them. You repurpose them.
Yeah, I mount them on an index card.
Okay.
And then I put them in an envelope.
Yeah.
Put the address and send them to friends. And these cards are so beautiful. The colors, the printing, some of them have like an embossed type of printing. And then you get to see what's written on the backside of the
yes.
Christmas postcard.
Which,
you know, greetings, John Smith, wish you were here, so on and so forth.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then the addresses are just really interesting.
Why?
Here you have a card that's 110 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Now, back in those days, that card was addressed. Now, here's the address. John Smith, Coventry, New York. And it got there.
Come on. That's all it took.
That's all it took, Tom. Yes. I send those all the time. I gave one to a friend last year. It was dated 1924. That was the year that her husband's mother died.
Yeah.
And when they opened the card, he saw that. He just broke out in tears.
Hey, John, stick with us. Daniel Gifford, this is right up your alley. I mean, I think these postcards, the ones from early in the 20th century, are the ones you really got into. And here's our caller, John, in Coventry, New York, absolutely smitten with that old vein of holiday greeting.
I am just so excited to hear that he's doing this because he's right. They are just fantastic artifacts, and they have so much information. They have, you know, these names and these addresses and these messages and these dates, and then the image on the front. They're just really wonderful artifacts. I'll just add to what he was saying. I've even seen ones that go a step further. If they've actually been mailed within the same town, they wouldn't even bother to put the name of the town. They would just say John Smith Town.
Okay. You know where to go, mailman. What's the most interesting message you've read, John, on these there in Coventry? And can you read the handwriting?
A lot of times you can't, Tom, because I think a lot of them were sent by the real elderly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did have one the other day that they mentioned the tremendous amount of snow, and they didn't think they were going to be able to get to their neighbor's home for the Christmas dinner because of the amount of snow.
Yeah. Well, this is before you had the huge snow plows coming down the street, maybe.
Absolutely.
A different time. You bring it to mind beautifully, John. I really appreciate your call there from Coventry, New York. Let's go out west up mountain way again. Steamboat Springs, Colorado. Janet is calling. Hi, Janet. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I am so thrilled that you're doing this because I totally agree with your callers. 40 years ago, I was working in Brooklyn, New York, and I ran across a box of old postcards,
okay.
2,000 of them.
2,000, wow.
2,000 in an old cardboard box.
Yep.
It was starting to rain. I grabbed them, and they were from 1880s to 1920s, and I carried them on two buses back to my house in Staten Island.
Yeah.
And all night I went through them. They were all from the same family, the McKnight family, who came over from Ireland, settled in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And I have the history of this amazing family. And
you could trace it through their Christmas cards.
Through the Christmas cards, they had four boys in their family, four girls. The four boys were in the Navy. So the cards came from all over the world.
Wow.
And I still have that history. And the most interesting, like you were just talking to someone from New York, and he said he was talking about the most interesting statement on the card.
Yes.
Well, it was the first Match.com.
Oh, tell us.
Postcards. Let me tell you, these women were all single, and they worked in a candy factory in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And I even found a box from the candy factory, okay?
Yeah.
It was an abandoned house I went into.
Okay.
And I found these cards. So they, during the war, I think it was World War I, they would send candy to the servicemen all over the world. And in the candy, they would put their address, okay?
Right.
When they were boxing the candy.
Hey, sailor.
And then the servicemen would send postcards to them.
Yeah.
Saying, like, the candy was dandy. Can we meet? I'll be at the Brooklyn Navy Yard.
Yeah, I'm sure they were.
Oh,
I love it.
Oh, my God, it was hysterical.
We got some steamy holiday action here.
Yeah, it was great. So anyway, I just feel like they're so important to me, and it tells the history of this family.
Do you send your own cards out from Steamboat Springs, Colorado, Janet, these days?
All the time. I'm doing that today. And, yeah, it's great.
Thanks for taking us back into 40 years of McKnight family, Irish immigrant family history through their cards and your call. One more right here from Buffalo, New York again. Brian, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Well, I'm okay. What do you think of the holiday card tradition, Brian?
I can't stand it. I'm a Gen Xer.
Okay.
So I grew up with my parents sitting us down and making us help sign all the cards.
Oh, like, boy.
And now at this point, you know, I'm 41. It's yeah. like, I don't need all the paper in my mailbox. Just put it directly in my recycling bin.
Oh, man.
How long am I supposed to hold on to these things?
Brian, you're such a Scrooge. Directly to the recycling bin? Are you kidding? What about the precious messages therein?
I have a telephone. Give me a call. Hey, happy holidays. I probably won't see you. We were thinking of you. Great. Now I don't have to put anything in the recycling bin.
Hanging
on the door. And how long is it supposed to stay on the door for? I mean, I don't know. It just seems like a waste of resources.
All right. We will not be sentimental about this, Brian. You're keeping it crisp right there. And I love that, too. Thanks for your call from Buffalo. I mean, Miriam, you've got people who are just swooning and willing to go back a century to go deep in thousands of cards and others, bring in the recycling bin. They're done with all that, Miriam.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I can understand, honestly, I can understand both. People have different ways of expressing their love and their sentiment towards others. In our business, we see people keeping the cards as keepsakes for a very long time, and even now, asking us to frame cards, meaning take the cards and actually frame them so that they can even keep them longer.
Wow. Yeah.
It's a big difference among different people.
Forever. My mother used to take the best cards and make placemats out of them. She'd, you know, put them between sheets of contact paper, like I think they called it, and they'll still go on my table every Christmas, and they bring back lots and lots of memories. Grant in Arlington, Massachusetts. Grant, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the time for my call. We're sort of a middle-of-the-ground family. We use a service online where we pick templates that we like and supply the photos from our kind of yearly stash of ones we like and build a card with a message that we send out. And with the ones we send out about 100, and we display the ones we get. We have them over the mantle in a large kind of arch.
Yeah.
My one rule is, as a family, we have two boys, is that as a parent, if you send out a card with photos, you have to show the parents as well. A pet peeve is when they just show the kids and you have no idea what the parents look like.
You can't hide your paunch or whatever's going on and just put the kids out front.
Sometimes the photos aren't the best, but as a parent, but you need to show the family. But yeah, it's a sort of a celebratory. It's part of our Christmas regalia, and the message isn't detailed, but it kind of lets people know how we're doing and something more sincere than just a Facebook post. So it's part of our Christmas culture and in our family.
Does it ever go away, Grant? I mean, you heard our Buffalo caller this time saying, no thanks, recycling bin for all that. Do you think it's a forever deal?
They tend to be a little bit more disposable. We don't. The ones that are more special, we might say. We save our own for time. But, it is also, we can check in with a lot more people because we don't have to handwrite the things that like that. I used to dread those, just like I dread thank you notes after Christmas. But so kind of the service that prints them for us and does the addressing and gets them to us in short order, that actually makes, it's a middle ground that makes things a lot more easier for us as a family while still allowing us to kind of, I believe in paper. I like books. I like paper Christmas cards.
Something to believe in. Paper. Let me get one more. Grant, I appreciate your call. 100 cards. Punch the buttons. Out they go. Mark in New Orleans. You're our last caller. Thanks, Mark. What do you got?
Hi, Tom. This is Mark. I wanted to share a story. Several years ago, I learned that my fifth grade teacher in Virginia, that her husband had passed away. I knew both of them when I was a young boy. Mm-hmm. So I thought I would send her a Christmas card and tell her I was sorry to hear about her husband.
You're a nice guy.
Not only did she return a Christmas card to me, but she included a thank you for being a great teacher card that I had given her in 1968 when I was in the fifth grade in her class. And I got to tell you, it brought a tear to my eye. I thought that was a great way to reconnect with her. And we exchanged cards for several years after that. She has since passed away.
What was her name, Mark? Remind us of your fifth grade teacher's name who kept your card all those years.
Her name was Elsie Stockberger in Norfolk, Virginia. Yes.
I love it.
So, just another reason to keep in touch with people.
Elsie Stockburger, remembered by Mark in New Orleans, and that's a beautiful story in itself. Chris Wu, here we are. Cards going out the door right now. Not much more time, right? I mean, you can't wait forever to get these out for the holidays.
No, it's now's the time. It's I think you have another week or two in order to order, and then send them off in the mail and get them in people's box before the holidays.
Amazing. What stays durable, made of paper and ink, even in a time of, what, bits and bytes and all that's digital. Really grateful to all three of you for being with us today. Chris Wu at Paper Culture with us from Hillsborough, California today. Thank you very much for joining us, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
Mariam Nafisi at Minted, founder and CEO there out of San Francisco today. Mariam, good holidays to you.
Thank you.
And Daniel Gifford, our scholar on holiday cards out of George Mason University. Thanks for joining us, Professor Gifford.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm on Twitter at Tom Ashbrook, NPR. Thanks for joining us today. This is On Point. Most wonderful time of the year. There'll be much mistletoeing and hearts will be glowing when loved ones are near. It's the most wonderful time. Yes, the most wonderful time. Oh, the most wonderful time.